Welcome to the Open Book Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Sox, the Catholic book blogger, and this is episode 7. My guest today is a poet, published author, and mother of six. Perhaps her most intense writing experience came about with her book, Camarado, I Give You My Hand, which is the focus of today's show. Welcome, Maura Zagros.
Thank you for having me, Pete. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're quite welcome. So let's dive right into this whole experience of Camarado, I Give You My Hand. Can you give us readers who haven't, or listeners who haven't read it yet, a little background about what the book is about?
The book focuses on the astonishing and inspirational life of a man named David Link. He had an incredible career in academe and law, serving notably for almost 25 years as the dean of the University of Notre Dame Law School. When the love of his life, his wife of 45 years, passed away, his response to the sorrow at her passing was to become an ordained priest who serves full-time to men who are incarcerated in prison. When I heard a thumbnail sketch of what this man had done at the age of 71 in becoming a priest, I shouted out, "That's a book," and I set to work writing the book immediately.
Right.
Meeting Father Link, going behind the razor wire and meeting the brothers that he serves, hearing their stories, and just walking in his Bostonian, so to speak, for 3 years changed my life. I learned so much, and I'm so blessed for having done so.
So you point out there in that little brief synopsis of the book, you were actually behind the wire, behind the walls, in the prisons with these prisoners. What was that like?
It was life-changing in that it showed me that people can change completely. And most of the men that I talked with and got to know real well are exquisitely aware of just how much they've changed. It's not that they have defense mechanisms and they say, I was wrongly prosecuted, or they don't nitpick the whys and the wherefores of how they got there. It's just that they know they're a different person now and they're ready to serve in a new way. What changes them more than anything I found is the healing hand of friendship. And the healing hand of friendship most often brings to them a personal touch that feels like God. Over and over and over again, I heard from every man I spoke with, if only I had met Father Dave or someone like him, I wouldn't be here today. But having said that, they all agree they're glad to have met him now and that they can focus, even if they know they have a lifetime sentence and they'll never get out of prison. They're working their way towards God, towards God's riches that they will experience in heaven. He changes lives just by talking to them, speaking with them, listening to their stories, being a friend.
So what the book basically is a dual story, really. It's the amazing story of itself, of how Father Link, started this work, became a priest, and then you have the flip side story of it, of the men in prison whose lives are being changed by Father Link.
That's correct. You get to know these prisoners in a way that surprises you from reading Camarado. You see the human side, and you see that it doesn't take a whole lot to affect meaningful change and bring people to God. Father Dave was just a dad. He was a husband, a father. He's a grandfather of 15. A wonderful man, the life of every party. He was actually quite a character. He was an athlete, long distance runner every day for health. He had many, many interests, lots of hobbies. He was a terrific golfer. You name it, this guy's done it. He's even sailed a championship sailboat. It's just crazy. Every time I was with him, I learned something new about him that blew my mind. That having been said, along with an accomplished career, he always found time to help the underprivileged. It started with volunteering as a civil rights activist in the 1960s. That progressed to helping the poor and the immigrants in Chicago in the 1980s. He was an instrumental part in winning a landmark case there. I described that in the book, Camarado. That progressed to co-founding one of the very finest homeless centers in South Bend, Indiana in the 80s, a homeless center that is a model today. And from there, he went to volunteering at a maximum security prison. He gave a lecture, a three-series lecture on ethics and the law to lifers, to men who will never get out of prison, all of whom are convicted murderers. And he said, you know, he never felt quite so alive as when he was with them. And then when Barbara passed away, he found that he belonged there. His bishop blessed the ministry, and he is a full-time chaplain.
Very, very interesting story indeed. So how did you first hear about Father Link, and what drew you to want to write this book?
I was in a business meeting at the University of Notre Dame when the woman who was conducting the meeting was catching my husband up on what the former dean of the law school is doing now. And just a couple of the buzzwords that she used spoke to me. I, too, have been very interested in the causes of homelessness. I've served on my local homeless board for 6 years. I've done projects to help the women and children there. I've read the body of literature on homelessness. It's a passion of mine. I'd never done anything in prison ministry. I'd never even given it a thought, like I think most people. That's one of the purposes, I think, of Camarado, to bring this very real problem that America has home to more people like me. You know, out of sight, out of mind, right? You know, we don't think about what's buried. Anyhow, a couple of the buzzwords that this woman mentioned in a couple of sentences. Pete, literally, I felt an arrow to the heart. I've heard people describe love at first sight, but for me, it was book at first word. You know, I knew that this was my story to tell. And I literally shouted out in the middle of the meeting, that's a book. And then I was completely embarrassed, but, you know, it was an inspired moment. I think it was a Holy Spirit-led moment. When I first met Father Dave, we talked for more than 3 hours over breakfast. I laughed. I cried. He laughed. He cried. And we both agreed that this was the hand of the Holy Spirit moving us together. I love the man, and I love his example. What he showed me is that all of us can do something. You know, Pete, there are so many people in need, but there are also so many people, at least as many, if not more, who want to help in some small way.
But they don't know.
You know, yes, they need a vehicle. They need an entree or some sort of mechanism set up that helps them get their foot in the door and give whatever it is their gifts might be. We all have different gifts. We all have different things that we can offer. And that led to something that's my new project is this Camarado Corps that I'd love to see initiated and established and flourish.
And let's talk about
my way of thinking. Yeah, go ahead.
Let's talk about that a little bit. What is your idea behind the Camarado Corps?
Well, the Camarado Corps, I envision it as a sort of a nationally based Peace Corps, whereby volunteers could be linked up with homeless centers and prisons that need help. There is very little budgeting for education or reentry programs anymore. It's almost impossible even to earn a degree behind bars these days. That's just the budgeting gone for that. Homeless centers are struggling. We have an enormous new population that's burgeoning of veterans who are now homeless. It's getting to be a national crisis, especially women vets, believe it or not. The number of female veterans who are homeless is on the rise. And female veterans are 2 to 3 times more likely to become homeless than any other group in the whole United States population. Well, you know, I personally know that the kind people who are my friends and acquaintances have a yearning to do something meaningful with their lives, in addition to their careers and their families and their hobbies. They want to do something that answers that call to, you know, our higher selves. And if we set up a national organization where all they got to do is click on, you know, a website and be connected with someone locally who can give them the right person who's looking for a yoga instructor or a literacy expert or someone who loves gardening. I met a woman who had read Camarado, and she called me up and she said, you know, I love to knit prayer shawls. I'd love to be able to deliver prayer shawls to people who want them. I have people who hand make rosaries, and they say, I would love to donate some of my rosaries to prisoners who can't otherwise get them. Things like that. There's just something we all can bring to the banquet table.
What kind of time frame would something like that take? I mean, I know this, the book, we had done an email interview about it when it was released, and you said the manuscript took a year and a half for the book itself.
Yes.
Putting that into perspective of this project, this would be, one, a big thing to do. So where are you with that? Are you pursuing it at all? Or?
I am, and so is Father Dave. He is on the speech stump, as they say. He crisscrosses the country all year round, making speeches wherever he's invited. He is the most popular and most requested Hesburgh lecturer that they've ever had at Notre Dame. I've lost count of how many Hesburgh lectures he's delivered. He's very passionate about getting something like the Camarado course started. And he's also written a crime peace plan, a 12-point plan. It's 10 points in my book, but he's revised it. With just common sense changes we can make right now to our criminal justice system to help end the madness. So I've got his support. What we need, I think, is a politician or someone in an office who sees the value of this and just takes it and runs with it. Way back in, was it 1961? Yes. 1961 was when President Kennedy signed executive orders that put the Peace Corps onto the map. Since then, more than 220,000 Americans have served in over 140 countries. And I look at those numbers and I think, what if some of that youthful idealism was channeled right back into our country? Mm-hmm. How many things could we turn around? There'd be zillions. The blessings to America would be so abundant. It's inevitable, you know?
Right.
There have been other organizations that tried to do a piece or a part of this, but in all of my interviews, hundreds of interviews, for example, I never met a felon or a former felon whose family had any connection to VISTA, who has a small part of their program where they mentor prisoners. So I don't think maybe the marketing is speaking to the youth, to college grads who are having trouble finding a job but would love to intern somewhere, you know? Mm-hmm. They would be served by serving. I think that something pointedly focused on homelessness and prisons would speak to a number of young Americans and housewives like me, mothers, fathers, just people like Father Dave, who can't maybe go build homes for Habitat for Humanity, but who want to do something.
Right.
If it were community-based, then that one-on-one gives you tremendous, you know, instant gratification. You see the benefits of your time when the person that you're working with is unfolding and blossoming right in front of your eyes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So what we basically have here is you started this book in, it was released in 2012 and 2010, I believe is when your work started on the book. So 5 years later, you obviously have a passion for this project. So How did
the... We're trying to just upturn something.
Yeah.
You know, I'm writing to legislators. We're sending books out to people. Everyone we speak with thinks it's a wonderful idea. We just haven't found someone who has the clout to... Who am I? I'm a mother of six. You know what that's like. You know, I'm just doing my own little thing here.
Yeah.
And I've never been a political person. Almost all of my life until I started writing was just completely devoted to my children. It wasn't until I published Miracles Every Day that I set aside some of the time that I devoted to my family and answered my calling to use this talent that God's given me. So how long will it take? Hey, if President Kennedy can sign an executive order on March 1st, 1961, and boom, the whole world knows about the Peace Corps, mm-hmm. all it takes is one person. It just takes one person saying, this is a great idea, let's go with it. And I think that people would flock to this system of service, especially now with the way that we have the web, and it's so easy to just click on a link. I mean, none of those resources were available to us in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole different world now. It'd be so exciting.
Mm-hmm. So the book itself has actually gotten a lot of attention on the national stage. You and your work with Camarada were featured on a CBS special. Would you like to talk about that?
Oh, yes. That was really so much fun. Liz Konecki was the main producer for CBS Religion, Culture and Religion program. It's they issue a quarterly 30-minute documentary of the very highest standards. And in fact, I couldn't be more thrilled that the episode Liz Konecki and her staff put together on Camarada won first prize in 2015 with in their industry. They're called the Wilbur Award, and my particular episode garnered her first prize. So she's doing great work. It's important work. We need more people to click on the links and watch the segments because they're all fabulous. But I'm very, very proud of the one that she did. It's called Crime, Punishment, and Redemption. It's, CBS. And working with her was an absolute joy. She and her crew came to South Bend last August for a day. We dragged them to one of our facilities, and they were able to go behind the razor wire as well and meet some men. And they took their cameras into a classroom where Father Dave teaches reentry programs on anger management and other social skills. The culture and religion program is just terrific. It's I can't say enough about the work that they're doing. And it was a thrill to be involved with a production of that high quality. She got some good feedback. We got terrific feedback. Of course, it makes a huge difference to anyone who's behind bars. It gives them hope. Somebody's listening. Somebody cares.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we also have good news on the political front because it seems that groups representing both the left and the right have come together at least on one topic. The Center for American Progress and the Koch Industries have formed something they call the Coalition for Public Safety. And their goal, they say, is to take a look at what is causing our crisis of over-incarceration. America incarcerates 2.2 million Americans on any given day.
Wow.
The costs are, they're crippling. Some states spend more on prisons than they do on education. And that's exquisitely painful because education is what keeps people out of prisons. You know, so we're backwards here. We're putting money into building new cells and new structures rather than putting money into interventions at the educational level for little kids. For example, I learned while I was writing Camarado that some states now use poor reading scores in third and fourth grade to predict how many cell beds they will need when these third and fourth graders become of age. So they plan for the prisons, but they don't put the money into helping the kids now. How wrong is that?
Yeah. Yeah, that is a sad state of affairs.
We need to stop these backwards thinking things. So yeah, it's expensive. It's undercutting the very foundation of American society. And it's going to come back to bite us all in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't want our children growing up and dating and marrying the very, very broken children of incarcerated parents, do we? Because that is a whole world of pain that becomes, I mean, it affects all of us, all to think about down the line how really none of us escape this, nor should we want to. Anyone with a conscience should care enough to know that, you know, we made this mess. We can get us out of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of exposure, you even made it to Maria Shriver's website. I have it up here in front of me. Her Powered by Inspiration blog.
Yeah. She's an incredible force. She's a great voice in America. I was very honored and flattered that she asked me to write a piece for her. And I'd like to do more. I love writing in general, of course. It's my passion. Time disappears when I'm at my keyboard. I can write for 14 hours a day, and I look up and I think, oh, my goodness, you know, the stars are out. So it's what I love to do. But I don't want to write just to write. You know, there has to be a purpose. I won't write unless I have something to say. And unless it's meaningful, you know.
Now, you and I have had this conversation before, but this book in particular kind of took a lot out of you as far as time, commitment, and you stepped back from writing for a bit. Do you have any projects in the works now?
Yes. The next book I'd like to write, I'd like to focus on hospice caregivers. I think people who give hospice care are a particular kind of an earth angel. Not many people can do what they do, and I'd like to get inside the psyche and the soul of that calling. How do you do it, you know, and what keeps you going? What are the rewards and the blessings? What are the heartaches? How is the heartache of helping someone who's dying and the family with, you know, all of the, you know, good and bad that implies? How do you go home and have your own life? And then get the patient side of that too. But I'm intrigued with that whole subject. America is fairly new to the hospice caregiving scene. I'd like to do a cross-cultural investigation and compare the way other societies have been doing it for centuries. You know, in my lifetime, I've seen a turnaround. When I was a psychology major way back in the 70s, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was all the rage. She wrote on the five stages of grief and death and dying and, you know, began to introduce this idea of people don't have to die alone in a hospital with tubes coming out of them. There's a better way. And since then, we've come into this newer, more beautiful way of helping people transition to the next phase of their spiritual, you know, soulful life.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like an interesting project indeed. So, as you know, I have a blog about books. I know you love books. So what are you reading right now?
I was hoping you would ask me. Yeah, this is, you know, Pete, you and I are just twin sorts in that way. I've never met, I think, anyone quite as avid a reader as you, and I love having the friendship that we share. I have a stack of books that I just finished, a stack of books that I work on at all times, you know, to do. It's just all over the board. I've just finished, I'm in this binge of reading William McCullough, who does historical stuff, and he's just brilliant. I've got a novel on the way. I always read poetry at all times. Wendell Berry is probably my favorite, and his friend Wes Jackson, because they write about, I think, the spirituality of the universe, how to live on this planet with other creatures the way we should, you know, honestly and ethically. Mm-hmm. I just finished a terrific book called The Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton. And it's about epigenetics, about how everything that we think affects our cells, cellular level, how we can, you know, and that is hand in hand with what I researched for my first book, in Andrew Newberg's work on neurotheology. You know, there's these brain-based things that they've been able to prove now with imaging that show the power of prayer, the power of meditation, mm-hmm. the power of anger, and what happens to our brain structures when we engage in one or the other. I have a couple of really cool books to recommend. One of them you recommended very highly. Did you love 5 Years in Heaven by John Schlimm?
That was great. Great book.
Yeah. Have you read Between the Dark and the Daylight by Joan Chittister?
I have not read that one yet.
You'll love it. It's a good one. I want to recommend Peter Story's book called With God in the Crucible. He is a pastor from South Africa. He was, for a time, Nelson Mandela's spiritual advisor and chaplain when Mandela was on Robben Island. Mm-hmm. And I met him last summer, when he came to America. He's an amazing man who was in the heart of the fight against apartheid, and successfully led his people in nonviolent measures. So his book, With God in the Crucible, is just beautiful. Another book called Chasing the Shore by David Wheel is just chock full of inspirational, gorgeous reflections. And believe it or not, I have two books on my desk written by prisoners. The first is a little book of poems put together by a friend of mine, Judith Wolford, who works with some of the guys at Indiana State Prison. And one of the characters you meet in Camarado, Anthony Wheeler, if you recall him, has a poem called The Ignatius Way that just takes my breath away. It's so, so beautiful. And he talks about, you know, what his life is like now that he has God in his heart. I also I have a book on my desk written by another prisoner. It's essays and poems and things. This man was once the head of the Asatrus, which is a pagan worship group. He now is attends mass at Father Dave's masses at Indiana State Prison, and is changing the lives of other men in the prison with his example and influence and words and prayers. So there's a lot of good being done just by the power of the pen, I think.
Mm-hmm, indeed. So thank you very much for joining me today, Mara. It was great talking to you. I wish you all the luck with your Camarado Corps and your future endeavors with that project. Any closing words before we leave?
Thank you so much for what you do. I have to say, I admire you to the nth degree. You are a very busy man. You are a devoted father and husband. You are involved in your community. You remind me quite a bit of Father Link, and I can't think of any higher praise. And yet you find the time to blog about Catholic books and sort of be our advanced scout. And I appreciate that. Thank you, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much, Mark.
You're welcome.
So, folks, until next time, open a book, keep reading, build your faith, and go evangelize. God bless.
walk on distant shore, I miss myself. Look what I've become, I miss myself. When I was young, I miss myself. Take me where you are, I miss myself.